I'm just throwing this out for a starters. We're beginning to study the Haggadah. And it seems to me that we always gain a greater appreciation, understanding of Torah in general, specific things we learn about the story of the Exodus or any other story in the Torah. There's just so much that we can understand at a given point in time. And the idea of the Seder, that is that every year we return to the same story. And that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Now there's a very simple question that pertains to that. In the chapter or the paragraph Avad Minyan LaParo B'Mitzrayim, that we were slaves to Paro in Egypt, and God took us out of there with a mighty hand, and had God not taken us out of there, then we and our children and our children's children would be subordinated, would be slaves to Paro Mitzrayim. Then it says, Afilu Kulan Chacham, even if we're all wise, Kulan Navonim, we're all people of discernment, Kulan Zakenim, we're all elders, Kulan Yodim Es HaTorah, we all know the Torah, Mitzvah Olein L'Saper B'Tzias Mitzrayim. It's a mitzvah, it's incumbent upon us to tell the story of the Exodus. B'chol amar v'lasaper b'tzias Mitzrayim, hareza meshubach. And the more one increases, the greater one is involved in the discussion, the more praiseworthy the person. What is the reason for this? To tell the story of the Exodus. But let me ask a different kind of a question. And that is, of course it mentions even if we're all wise, if we're all discerning, well, all these are questions. Because if it's a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah. So there's no need to get into these particulars. There's no indication in Judaism that these groups of people who happen to know the Torah or are wise, that somehow should be exempted from any mitzvahs. To the contrary. The greater the person, the more we assume he's going to perform the mitzvah. So here it's being taken as though I might have thought that since he's such a great chacham, he's such a wise person, that maybe he'd be exempt from the mitzvah. Why does it have to emphasize this idea that the most advanced people in terms of Torah are not exempted? An obvious question that arises is, I can understand why we need to know the story. It's important. It's a significant foundation of everything. The formation of the Jewish people goes back to the point of being slaves and being redeemed from the enslavement. However, isn't it something that we already know, that we know by now? So I could see that this is obligatory for a person to obtain this type of knowledge. But we could also envision a point in time when a person could say, I fulfilled that mitzvah. For example, let's apply this to other areas of historical knowledge. Let's assume for argument's sake that it was a requirement. Well, it is in schools, it's a requirement to know certain things of history. You take a course in history. So you have to know basic American history, whatever it is, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the wars of this century. So that may take some time to gain the knowledge of it. So how much time do you have? Whatever, be reasonable. 3-year course, 4-year, whatever the case may be. And then there's certain tests that you take. And when you pass the course, you fulfilled your obligation. That's an obligation. Assuming you did well, you passed the course, you know what you need to know. So it's difficult to imagine an obligation to study the Revolutionary War, you know, endlessly. People would say that's absurd. Once you know it, you know it. Everybody has to know it. Because if you don't know that, you don't know the foundation of the country. But once you know it, okay, so you can know a little bit better. But how much are you going to study? You can say the same thing about anything. You can say that even about the Holocaust. There's no question that obviously a person can spend the next 5,000 years studying the Holocaust or any other event because there's so many minutiae, there's details. But most people would say that you need to get the essentials, the essential ideas. It's not necessary to know all the particulars, it's not necessary to know all the details. So there too, it's finite. If it's finite, so then if there's an obligation, so the obligation also should have some type of an end point to it. I remember years ago we had a waitress. We hired a waitress who was not Jewish to serve. We had big gatherings at the Seder. So during the breaks when we were doing the Haggadah, so she'd be listening in and asking questions. She was interested in what we were doing, and I was explaining. And she would keep saying, but didn't you learn all of this when you went to religious school? And I was trying to explain to her the basic mitzvah, the basic obligation of the night is to study the story of the Exodus. So it struck her as being very strange. She assumed, I'm a rabbi, don't you know that? How'd you become a rabbi? And you don't know this. That was very strange to her. But even more so the next year when she came back, and said, you guys are doing the same thing again? You did this last year. She was serious. You couldn't understand this kind of a mitzvah. So now I'm going to turn it over to you. Let's assume you're in that position and somebody asked you that. Okay, I recognize that this is important. I recognize that we need to know this. But we did this last year. And what's the point? Just an aside, a bit of advice to people who are going to be participating in a Seder or leading a Seder. And one of the difficulties is that people just want to read through the text and maybe sing some songs and get to the food part. People aren't always interested or they don't have the patience to go into it in any kind of depth. So essentially there's a certain kind of a pressure. Also bearing in mind that generally at that time of the year, the days are later, so it's really late at night, people may be hungry, and all the work that was done in preparing for Pesach, so people are tired. It's a challenge to get the type of discussion. And the real essence of a Seder is discussion. It's a challenge to get it going. And especially when you're reading these texts, which are pretty much scripted. If it's scripted, it's very difficult. My advice is, before you actually start to read the Haggadah, so let's say after you've made Kiddush, just have some provocative questions, icebreakers, to get some discussion going along these lines. It doesn't have to be that direct. It depends upon your cleverness. So it doesn't have to be obviously related to the Seder, but in a hidden manner, in terms of going into it and analyzing it, it does connect. And once you get people involved in that kind of a discussion, so then you've created the framework. Then you can get going into the particulars. And, of course, to prepare in advance. So make some notes. It doesn't mean that if you're going to stop and try and analyze in depth every paragraph you read, it's going to get bogged down. You can't get the bogged down. You have to know, have a sense of the atmosphere, the people that you're going to be sharing it with. So then you plan out in advance certain things, cover some ground, and where you see something which is tantalizing, bring it up. But the best thing is to put people in the framework where they're free to give their own thoughts and ask their own kinds of questions and responses and partake of a discussion. If you partake of a discussion that focuses around this subject and enables you to get into this subject through that means, that's the real essence of the Seder. The question we're getting back to, though, is, can be phrased, why study what you already know? It's being mentioned that there is a mitzvah to refer, to mention the Exodus, which we do in the Kriyat Shema, by day and by night. That is true, but that's different than the mitzvah of Sipur, in a number of respects, which we're not going to go into right now. Essentially, we're just referring to the fact, taking note that the fact that the Exodus occurred. That's remembering. But Sipur is more. Sipur is to immerse yourself in the story itself, everything pertaining to the story. Point is being made that in certain cases, for example, with regard to the Megillah, we read the Megillah every year. And one can say, well, why don't I ask the same question? Don't we already know the Megillah? Well, to a certain extent, the answer that we give over here will apply to that. But there I don't feel the sting of the question. There, it's not really to engage in study per se. It's reading the Megillah, and it's clearly the purpose of the reading is what we call Persumei Nisa, to publicize the miracle. In much the same way as lighting the Hanukkah lights on Hanukkah is to publicize the miracle. So that's something else. That's remembering a miracle and giving praise to God over a miracle, and the vehicle for doing so is through the reading of the Megillah. Notice, there it doesn't mention that even if we're all wise men and learned and so forth, we still have to read the Megillah. That's because that's not appropriate. Since the reading of the Megillah is to a means to achieve the objective of the publicizing of the miracle. However, with regard to the mitzvah we're talking about here, which is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the telling of the story of the Exodus, the essence over here is not Pirsumei Nisa, to publicize the miracle, that's a byproduct. But the essence is that is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to immerse oneself in the story of the Exodus. And thus the question arises that we already know the story. But what about people that already know the story? Why doesn't the obligation, so to speak, expire at that point when the person knows the story? The answer to that is that this is the difference between Torah and history. If Torah were just history, so then you're right. History, historical knowledge is like any other area. It's limited. It's finite. When I say it's finite, I mean in the sense of how much a person would be expected to know, which would be reasonable to know. There are historians that spend their entire life studying one isolated event. A person can do that. A person can spend his entire life studying one year in the history of World War I. I wouldn't be surprised. I believe that the Torah would look upon such a person as pretty much foolish. It's not our idea of knowledge. You can make something into a specialty, and it's knowledge, the knowledge of all the minutiae, the details. In any area, as I said, details are endless. You can study a day in the life of an individual, and you can write thousands and thousands of volumes on it. Of course, you'd be writing about all kinds of meaningless nonsense. The Torah is not history. The events which take place in the Torah, which the Torah describes, the means for establishing certain ideas, eternal ideas, eternal truths. And once it becomes incorporated as part of Torah knowledge, then it partakes of something which is infinite. The wisdom there is what we would regard as infinite. We're not involved in minutiae. We're not involved in details. We're involved in ideas. And once you get into that area, it takes you into the world of abstract ideas. So it's really a springboard. It's a springboard to study that area, to immerse yourself in the subject matter that pertains to that area. And thus, it applies to everybody. The mitzvah is not structured with a particular goal. That is, this is what you need to do. You need to have this knowledge. That's not the nature of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is really, to the contrary, a person shouldn't have any goal. He should just launch himself to be completely involved, to completely immersed in that area of study. That's why it mentions all of these different individuals. That it doesn't matter how much you've learned, it doesn't matter how much you know, because you're talking about something which is infinite. So everybody's equal as far as that's concerned. Each person begins that journey, that adventure from wherever he happens to be at that point in time. And that's why it says, V'chol ha'marbe l'saper. that this wouldn't apply if it was just a matter of obtaining a certain finite objective. So then there's nothing praiseworthy about excess, to be excessively involved. No, the one who is the marveh, the one recognizes the real purpose of the mitzvah. The purpose is to increase his insight, to increase his knowledge, his understanding, and his appreciation. That is the whole objective of this mitzvah. The question that's raised, but we did this last year, would only apply to someone who's doing this on the most minimal level. If a person just going through the motions and just reading the Haggadah and just getting the same simple story on the minimal level, you're right, it's still a mitzvah to do it, but that's not really the philosophical objective over here. I don't want to disparage anything. Of course, people that get together and just do the minimal, which many people do, that's because they don't appreciate what it's all about. So essentially, it's a very popular kind of a ritual. The Passover Seder is one of the most popular rituals in the Jewish calendar. And that's fine. But the objective, it's a tremendous opportunity to make a leap into a different type of an appreciation of what the Torah knowledge is all about. And that's the idea, which is expressed over here. That's the reason why God is telling you that at the very beginning, to understand the character of the mitzvah. By telling you that the greatest chachamim, the greatest wise people, the most knowledgeable people, will find in this a tremendous source of inspiration, and they won't feel bored. They won't feel that they're just repeating something. To the contrary, that's why it follows it up with that story of all the scholars that were gathered together in B'nai Brak, and they learned all night. That's the whole point of that, to tell you that they learned all night long until they even forgot about doing a mitzvah. They forgot about the Kriya Shema, the recitation of the Shema in the morning, and their students had to come and remind them. That is really an illustration of what the nature of the mitzvah is about, to actually get transported into a different world, to get lost in the world of Torah knowledge, of Torah ideas. That's really expressing, this is the essence of Judaism. This is the essence. The essence of Judaism is for a person to become transported to a different world. Not a world of fantasy and imagination and spiritualism, a world of reality which is perceived by the mind. That's why it mentions over here, who are these people? Not mystics. Well, wise men, chulana chachamim. Well, Navonim, discernment, Zakenim, elders. It doesn't mention anything about spiritualists and miracle workers and mystics and so forth. No. In Judaism, it's through the involvement in the real ideas of Torah, and that is something which transforms the individual, transports the individual into the world of ideas to the extent that he loses complete sense of everything that's going on in this world. That's a good thing. The students have to remind them, even mitzvahs he forgets about, which would seem to be, most people say, how's it possible? This would be the reaction of the ordinary individual, the ordinary religious individual, if you told that person about some rabbis that got together and became so engrossed they forgot to put on tefillin or something like that, the person would be shocked. How is that possible? This is something which goes contrary to people's perceptions of what Jewish religious observance is all about. Here it's telling you that they forgot. They forgot to do Kriya Shema. How is that possible? The answer is that Kriya Shema is an extremely important thing. It's an important mitzvah. But you have to recognize that what Judaism is really aiming at is a certain type of an experience. A experience of the total immersion, involvement, and enjoyment of the Chachmas HaTorah, the knowledge of Torah. And in that state, a person does lose sight of practical matters. What will be important to these people? The most practical thing would be to do a mitzvah, and that is not presented by way of criticism. This, to the contrary, it's presented to you to be able to appreciate what this mitzvah is all about. So certainly us, we're not on that level. There's so much that we can learn from it, and so many different areas that could be explored That by the way, that should be the way a person approaches it. To find an area. All you need to do is to find an area that you may have looked at before, but you see something differently now, and think into it, and don't be afraid to be original. It's good to have good sources at your disposal, no question about it. But what gets people moving is when they use their own minds and they ask their own questions and analyze it and think it through. Then, of course, you can consult with the authorities, so to speak, with the commentaries. There's a zillion commentaries out there. You have to be selective in terms of that as well. But there, too, to simply take a commentary and start reciting from a commentary without really getting into it and questioning it and bring it down to the level where you really it makes sense to you. It's part of your own body of understanding and knowledge. That's really the objective. Something occurred to me, which I hadn't thought of before. You know that a major point of the story, of the whole Exodus, is about the way in which it came about. That it was at specific, the exact point of the middle of the night. And everything fell apart completely. And Paro, at that day, he came chasing after Moshe and urging them to leave. The entire breakdown occurred in virtually like in a second or a minute, whatever, the whole thing. Instantaneous devastation. In spite of the fact that Paro was a very powerful and very stubborn king, and for the course of the year, it was about a year that Moshe was down there, so Mitzrayim had really been rocked by different types of plagues. But God hardened the heart of Paro. He was very stubborn, very resistant. Wouldn't give in. So it's very significant that when the end came, it came instantaneously. That's expressed in the idea of the matzah. The matzah that we eat is because of the geula, because of the redemption. When the redemption came, it came about in a very, very sudden manner in which you really couldn't even prepare for it. Which is interesting, because Moshe had told the Jews to get to prepare. The events leading up to the Exodus begin a few weeks before, that month, Nisan. He commands them. He's already giving them commands, mitzvos that pertain to the Exodus. The one about the taking of the sheep on the 10th and guarding it for 4 days. Then the slaughtering of the Passover sacrifice, the Passover lamb, and the sprinkling of the blood, which was important, which was essential. That was the determining factor if a person were to be destroyed along with the Egyptians or a person was to be saved depended upon whether they fulfilled the mitzvah. And the putting the blood on the doorposts is part of the mitzvah. Although people should not make the mistake of thinking that some kind of a crazy idolatrous idea that that's the way that God would recognize. Obviously that cannot be taken literally. In fact, as Rashi points out, it says that the blood shall be for you as a sign. Which means that the blood was on the inside of the zone, not the outside. Because God sees everything. God knows everything. God doesn't need to see that there's blood. That's just to talk that way is idolatrous. But as Rashi explains, God took cognizance of the fact that you performed the mitzvah. It was the fact that you performed the mitzvah. And you see the blood. You should know that it's only because of the performance of the mitzvah that differentiates you. It's another theme that the Jews should not feel that they're superior, that God intervened and saved them because God likes them, that emotion of egotism, that we're superior and God destroyed our enemies. But no, that you see, it's a very important point of the entire story, the extent to which God goes, again, so to speak, to bring the Russia back to Tshuva. That was the real objective. The Yadu Mitzrayim, that the Egyptians should learn these truths. And because of their great wickedness, it was necessary to visit them with punishments. But the punishments were intended for their benefit, to give them a wake-up call. to recognize the great power, the awesome power of God, that God is the only force that rules the universe. However, it's very, very significant, in spite of all of that, all of the foreknowledge that the Geula was coming, the redemption was coming, still at all, they had to leave in a hurry, and that's the whole idea of the matzah. That they had to leave in a hurry. And didn't have time for the dough to rise. How's that? Why didn't they know? Why didn't they prepare? Why wasn't everything ready? It would seem that even there, they didn't know how it would come about. They knew that as a result of the Makas Pacharos, the slaying of the firstborn, that would be the end. But let's put it this way, sometimes it's the beginning of the end. But how long will it take until the end actually comes? That they didn't know. But what's very, very fascinating, in my opinion, is that God worked it out so that when the end would come, it would come about in a manner which would leave no room for any kind of doubt that it was purely the hand of God, and not through some kind of historical process. There's always ways where people can give explanations. People look back, they try and give explanations. It was fortuitous, it was a political thing, the other thing happened, and the Pharaoh had other reasons, it wasn't useful anymore. People can have all kinds of reasons. Therefore, it had to be done in a manner which would create a sense, an impression, which was not open to any doubt. Now, it seems to me that just the recent events that occurred, I'm talking about the war against Iraq. And from the standpoint of military history, it's the most awesome display of power ever. And the type of power that the United States has accumulated, the precision bombing, and the approach. The announcement on the first night was that they were going to unleash this tremendous barrage aimed at the structure. The objective is not to kill civilians. The technology is very sophisticated. And they had advance notice in terms of where the leadership, Saddam Hussein, Yamash Shemo, and his henchmen would be. And it was a very bold maneuver to try and launch missiles in advance of any other attack to take out the leadership. We don't know the effects of it at this point in time, whether they actually injured him, whether he was killed. All this will be found out. Nevertheless, it was the beginning, and the war is still on, and the amount of progress is unbelievable, and it's amazing. They've traveled so much distance, they're on the outskirts of Baghdad, and so on and so forth. It's not even a week yet. But you see from there that with all that awesome might, and they're going against the country, which in turn, relatively speaking, whatever, they have an army, maybe they're a powerful force in the region, but the way I see it, going up against the United States is like the United States Army going up against a bunch of Indians with bows and arrows in terms of the technological relationship there. There's no way that they can possibly fight back. There are battles. I don't want to minimize it in that manner, but it's clear to the United States military. They're very, very clear. The result is certain. There'll be some setbacks along the way. The point being that could they achieve a strike, a blow that would bring the thing to an end in 1 second? It's over? No. Even in World War II with nuclear weapons and so on and so forth, all these things take a certain amount of time to achieve. You can appreciate, no, God said, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla, it'll be in the middle of the night, the exact point in time everything collapsed, and immediately the entire situation was transformed. Up till now the Jews had been slaves, and Pharaoh lost all of his power, came chasing after them to push them. Moshe, in fact, said, we're not going to leave at night. We're going to leave it by day. Because they didn't want to leave by night. It should appear like they were just sneaking out. They left in an organized fashion, beyond Rama, with a high hand, so to speak. Organized and standing tall. But that gives you a new appreciation of that particular phenomenon, that the matzah expresses the fact that the Exodus was was done in a manner which simply can't be duplicated. And never has been duplicated. That type of phenomenon never ever occurred. Since that time, there's been wars, there's been liberations from the oppressed, but always it's the result of some kind of a process. And even in cases where it happens more quickly than in other cases, it can't happen instantaneously. It was done in a manner which would leave an impression for all future generations that this can only be the Yad Hashem, the hand of God. I'm just pointing this out, that the more we learn, the more we observe, the greater the appreciation that we have. When we go back and we look at we study the story, it's a new light from which we can approach it. Yeah, just to clarify, the idea we mentioned before, that there was some basis, we might have thought that the wise person doesn't have to perform the mitzvah, is based upon this idea that if we were to assume that it means to achieve a certain level of expertise in the area, so he's achieved that level of expertise. He's a great chacham and he knows the area. So then he would be exempt. What's the point? We said it's not. The mitzvah is not to achieve a certain level of expertise, but it's to immerse oneself in a certain area of knowledge in order to partake of the ideas, which are infinite. So that's a complete... Therefore, it doesn't... To the contrary. Therefore, the greater the chacham, the more he's going to partake. The higher the degree of his investigation and his thought, and he'll discover more. He'll unravel more about the significance, the deeper meaning of what's going on in that area. To make it clear, the mitzvah of the sefer, of telling over the story, the Rambam describes that the highest level is really where you convey the information to others. Preferably, that's the whole idea of the four sons. That it's a transmission of the basic ideas of Judaism. That you tell the story in the framework of what the real objective, the real purpose, was the establishment of the Jewish nation and the giving of the Torah. So it's really the night, so to speak, of the Masorah. It's the night where we transmit the heritage, so to speak, from one generation to the next. However, the Rambam says that if one doesn't have a child, so one should tell the story to his wife or to anyone else that needs to be instructed. That's the second level, where it's not your own child, but it's someone that's in need of instruction. That's why it's the classical opportunity for so-called Kiruv, to invite people, not just friends, but people that are interested in learning more about Judaism. That's a big mitzvah, to tell over the story, to let them partake of it, and to learn about the foundations of Judaism. And if he doesn't have a person like that, so then he should tell it to his friend. Even two friends are equal, and neither one is really teaching the other person, but it's give and take. The mitzvah should be performed through the mechanism of give and take, of discussion, up and back. That shows you why is that the case, because it's an experience, it's a learning experience. It's not just reviewing ideas. When you're immersed in ideas, the best possible format is with another individual, and you're going up and back, questioning each other. And finally, of course, he says, what if he's all alone? If he's all alone, he still has the obligation, and that's the method that he should use. He should ask questions and answer his own questions. That's just a method by which a person arrives at a deeper understanding of the phenomenon.